This is probably the first church service that's ever been held on this property. So that's a memorable event, right? And we're Memorial Day weekend here. So you probably saw we had a few flags we put out. You probably see more flags flying this weekend. Flags at half mast. And now we thought that Memorial Day, we thought flags were at half mast if somebody specifically died, you know, like a person of military or, you know, even Hollywood these days. But I guess they just fly them at half mast for Memorial Day as well. So, but anyway, we tried to put a couple out. We'll get to the pile of rocks later, but we had a really nice one more flag to put up. Liberty put it right in the middle of the pile of rocks, and it looked really good for about 30 seconds. And then Bean thought we were having a parade, so he grabbed it and he like ran all over the pasture. So actually that's this flag because he chewed the thing for it. So we thought, well, we'll put it up here. But and get rid of some of this paperwork here. Okay, so Memorial Day is not not to be confused with Veterans Day, right? So Veterans Day is November the 11th. It's always the same date of the calendar. Memorial Day jumps around, doesn't it? It's the last Monday of May. And so it's actually early this year because we've got, it seems like it should be next weekend, right? But it's actually early this year. So, but Memorial Day is a day, it's not really a church or religious holiday, but it often kind of has that feel, doesn't it? Because there's just a lot of sentiment with, you know, remembering those who have died, and often we commemorate those who have died in the faith. But it was really specifically intended to be honoring soldiers, or well, they wouldn't be veterans because they would have died in battle, or they would have died from wounds that they sustained in battle. And so it's been an ancient custom really to decorate the tombs of soldiers for I guess all of time, but it specifically started around the Civil War, where Americans just started to commemorate those who had died in battle. And then after World War I, it became apparent that you know, they would make a special day just for that. It used to be called Decoration Day because they would decorate the tombs, right, with flags and everything. And I feel like I'm missing you, sorry, so I'm going to keep looking at you to make sure you're awake here. Okay, so if I walk this way too far, I'll fall in the pool. But so anyway, but it's so Decoration Day then is called Memorial Day, and it wasn't until boom, there we go. It wasn't until 1971, when Mr. Butch was about 8 years old, that and I was too, that it was actually an act of Congress that declared Memorial Day a national holiday, which I didn't know that. I thought it went way back to, and somebody's saying it does go way back to when you and Butch were kids, so that's way back. But so 1971, and I don't remember that, but I do remember Memorial Day was always that, the official kind of end of the school year, right? School was out. Thank goodness we were out of school. Sorry, homeschoolers, you just go through the summer. You know, there's no break for you guys. The pool opened, right? The pool in town opened. We could go swimming. You know, we could have picnics. We were off school. So that's what, you know, and of course we also would, we didn't have that many, I guess, military people in my family that, you know, we really commemorated that way. And we're commemorating something, right? That's something big. That somebody's shooting off, but that was my memories of Memorial Day. Anybody have other memories of Memorial Day? Maybe somebody like to share kind of their memories of Memorial Day as kids growing up. I don't know. Did you have picnics or get together with family or parades?
Just go visit grandparents and listen to grandpas tell stories about days gone by and
yep.
Wars gone by.
Yep.
That was
kind of fun. Right. Yep. And it's always appropriate. I was going to mention that too. That, you know, it's not Veterans Day, but we honor veterans, you know, as well. And these are specifically people who have died in the war. But it's always appropriate to if you see a veteran and there's not that many left of World War II, are there? you know, to thank them for their service. And often in the villages, they're wearing a hat with the, you know, where they served, the whatever ship it was on or whatever. And it's just, it doesn't take much to get those guys talking. And you're listening to some great stories that you know, are a piece of history, right? Really, that are just fading from us. So always thank those guys and thank them. That I always thank God. I tell them, well, thank God you're here to tell us those stories, and thanks for serving our country, and thank God that we're not memorializing you yet, but that's always an appropriate thing, is to thank them for their service. So do that when you see those guys around. But you know, these days it seems like, or this year, I guess, you know, all bets are off with schedules, and usually there's graduations, there's end of school parties or that kind of thing. And this year's a little different, but I still kind of excited about it being a 3-day weekend. So, you know, it's kind of nice. The boss gave me the weekend off, so because I gave her the weekend off, so and we'll pay for it on Tuesday when we show up. So, but anyway, it's a chance to just slow down a little bit. And I don't know, does anybody else feel like coronavirus has not slowed you down? I hear about all this extra time that people have to do stuff, and I don't, we haven't seen it happen, I guess. So that's maybe a good thing too. Is like we're not dependent on social distancing or not to stay busy. So anyway, so that's the end of the history lesson part of it. And but since it's a Sunday morning, Frank, good to see you guys here. I got a note from Steve Duran this morning. Up North Carolina, he found a place with how many acres? I don't know. Really?
48.
Holy mackerel! Wow. So he sent a picture of that and the new Google address. So next week we'll meet up there or something. I don't know. We'll Google it and say we're going to show up at his place. Hey, we could build a barn up on his place or something. So, but it was good to hear from Steve. But so since it's a Sunday morning, we're all here for church, which, you know, church is even kind of changing for us now, isn't it? We got a new direction, new thing we're doing, meeting in homes, and so it's a new, fresh feeling. Since we're here on a Sunday morning talking about Memorial Day, and there's this mysterious pile of stones over there, which my kids are just dying to find out why I bought this pile of stones and set it there. But I think Bean hasn't swallowed one yet, has he? He took one off somewhere. I've taken stones out of dogs, so I want to make sure that they're... Well, I should have counted them. But anyway, we hope we don't have to create any work for ourselves with that. But I thought it'd be good to study, you know, what, even though it's not a biblical holiday, what memorials are there in the Bible? And there's actually a lot of really cool biblical accounts of memorials, all different kinds of things. There's a lot of them, and I pared it down to just a few because it's heating up, and we don't want to have too many hot memories. But anyway, I thought, you know, and we've been actually talking the last, I don't know, few weeks. We had some Bible studies on Wednesday nights kind of about some of these a little more obscure Bible stories. And so I actually ran across some of these kind of obscure Bible, not just stories, right, but accounts in the Bible. And these are specifically where there's kind of a memorial. So what do you think, so just from your knowledge of Bible history before we even look at it, what do you think the first memorial in the Bible might have been? Go back to the first book of the Bible. Anybody, any guesses? Yeah, Levi. What's that?
Abel.
there was a stone involved with that. You're right, but that's, nah, not really what I'm getting at. But yeah, I see what you're saying.
Rainbow?
Ah, so let's go to Genesis 9. Genesis chapter 9, verses 8 through 16. Anybody want to grab that? And so yeah, Noah's flood. Don't know that anybody else had a flood, but we always say Noah's flood, right? chapter 9, verses, 8 through 16. Anybody got that? Want to read it? Still trying to get there. Let me move this way a little bit. Go ahead, anybody. Chapter 9, verses 8 through 16.
And God spake unto Noah and to his sons with him, saying, And I, behold, I establish my covenant with you and with your seed after you, and with every living creature that is with you, of the fowl, of the cattle, and of every beast of the earth with you, from all that go out of the ark to every beast of the earth. And I will establish my covenant with you. Neither shall all flesh be cut off any more by the waters of a flood, neither shall there any more be a flood to destroy the earth. And God said, This is the token of the covenant which I make between me and you and every living creature that is with you for perpetual generations. I do set my bow in the cloud, my bow in the cloud, and it shall be for a token of a covenant between me and the earth. And it shall come to pass, when I bring a cloud over the earth, that the bow shall be seen in the cloud, and I will remember my covenant, which is between me and you, and every living creature of all flesh, and the water shall no more become a flood to destroy all flesh.
All right, so that's not a stone or stones, obviously, but it's a rainbow. And so I think I learned somewhere, it was Answers in Genesis or something, that before the flood, there wasn't rain, right? There was just like a canopy of water. The theory, I mean, there's a number of theories and some have been disproved, but I learned somewhere that it hadn't rained until Noah's flood. And so you can study that out some more if you want. So there was obviously water vapor in the air and there was sunlight, but that's how a rainbow happens, right? The raindrops act like prisms, and we just saw one the other day. Oh, we didn't get as much rain as you guys had. But did the quality of the water change so that now they reflect light differently? Anyway, it doesn't matter. But there, all of a sudden now, after the flood, there is a rainbow. And I always think it's a little humorous, actually, that it's a reminder to God not to destroy us with a flood again. It's a reminder to us of God's protection. But if God's ever thinking of destroying the world again, and it's kind of like a string on his finger. Oh, yeah, I'm not going to destroy him with a flood. Okay, so I'll use fire instead. So I think it's just a little humorous that God's got a reminder. But it is it's a covenant. It's a reminder. It's a memorial, really, right? Really, more for God than us. And so it's one of those stories where God takes on almost some human attributes. Like, how would God forget that he's not going to destroy us with a flood? But at least he's got the rainbow up there to remind us. So that's, I think, just kind of a fun reference to a memorial. But the rest of them have a little more rocks in them. So let's go to Genesis 28. And this was the next memorial I thought was kind of cool. Genesis 28, verses 10 through 22, if anybody wants to grab that. So.
And Jacob went out from Beersheba and went towards Haran, and he lighted upon a certain place and tarried all night because the sun was set. And he took of the stones of that place and put them for his pillows and lay down in that place to sleep. And he dreamed, behold, a ladder set upon the earth, and the top of it reached to heaven, and behold, the angels of God ascending and descending on it. And behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord God of Abraham, thy father, the God of Isaac. The land whereon thou liest to thee will I give it into thy seed. And thy seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and thou shalt spread abroad to the west, and to the east, and to the north, and to the south, and in thee and in thy seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Behold, I am with thee, and will keep thee in all places whither thou goest, and will bring thee again into this land, for I will not leave thee until I have done that which I have spoken to thee of. Jacob awaked out of his sleep, and he said, Surely the Lord is in this place, and I knew it not. And he was afraid, and said, How dreadful is this place! This is none other but the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. Jacob rose up early in the morning, and took the stone that he had put for his pillows, and set it up for a pillar, and poured out oil upon the top of it. And he called the name of that place Bethel, but the name of that city was called Luz at first. And Jacob vowed a vow, saying, If God will be with me, and will keep me in this way that I go, and will give me bread to eat, and raiment to put on, so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then shall the Lord be my God. And this stone which I have set for a pillow shall be God's house, and of all that thou shalt give me, I will surely give the tenth unto thee.
Okay, so another great Bible account I remember as a kid, and you know, how comfortable it would be to lay on a stone for a pillow. But I always remember that Jacob grabbed some stones, apparently, not just one stone, but a pile of stones, and made a pillow, and that's when he had the dream. And he was, you know, at this point in Jacob's life, we just talked about this last week, I think, the story of Jacob and Esau. You know, there was some trickery involved, and Esau was out to kill him, and so Jacob's mom said, you better hit the road. And so this was, Jacob was fleeing, actually Esau, when he had this vision of the ladder and the angels coming and going from heaven. But when he woke up, he took the stone and made basically a memorial out of that, and actually called it a church, didn't he? Because he said, God is in this place, and what is a church? You know, a church is where God, well, we, you know, in a house of worship, we say it's God's house, but it's really anywhere we gather and worship the Lord, right? And so, and there wasn't a church building there. I don't think one was built later, but he said, hey, there's a church. God's here. This is I'm going to call this a church or a temple or whatever language he used at the time. But just another memorial, which actually had some rocks in it. So another Jacob and rock story is kind of interesting too. Is Genesis 31. Just go ahead to two or three chapters. 31, 45 through 22. And here again is the story of Jacob. You know, Jacob, like we learned last week, a little bit of a tricky guy, right? He was a little bit of a conniver, a little bit of a wheeler dealer. And so he was running from Esau. Well, now he's interacting with his uncle Laban. There was a thing with the wives where, you know, Laban tricked him and gave him the wrong sister for the wife, and he had to work another 7 years. So, you know, it came down to finally relationships broke down with Uncle Laban, right? And Jacob probably had it coming somewhat, but anyway, verses 45 through 22. So now Jacob is getting ready to part company with Laban. And here it says 45, Jacob took a stone and set it up for a pillar. And Jacob said unto his brethren, gather stones. They took stones and made an heap. So there's an heap of stones right there. I think that's grammatically correct, because H is not a hard sound. And so an heap is right. Is that right? Homeschool moms can check that one for us. But gather stones, make an heap. And they called the heap Jegar Sahadutha. But Jacob called it Galeed, because it was easier to say, I guess. And Laban said, this heap is a witness between me and thee this day. Therefore, the name was called Galeed and Mizpah, for he said, the Lord watch between me and thee while we're absent, one from the other. And so this was really another memorial. And years ago, and you probably still see them, there's actually this Mizpah necklace. Back in the day, right, when Butch and I were popular among couples, Christian couples, back in the day, right, when Butch and I were, we weren't eight, but now we were 18 probably, right? Okay, so I never had a girlfriend that we had this together, but there was a necklace where it's like they fit together. It was called the Mizpah necklace. Anybody heard of that? And I always thought, once I learned about what it was, I thought, well, that's kind of weird, because the phrase is, the Lord watch between me and thee while we're absent, one from the other. It's like, so if, you know, Brenna were going to go to Minnesota, you know, we could have this necklace, we'd be apart from each other, but the Lord will watch between us. But then I went and read the context. It's one of these classic stories where it's gotten taken out of context, right? Because Jacob and Laban were almost at odds, right? They were about to fight each other, and they made a pillar and said, okay, this is how far I'm going to go. This is how far you're going to go. We cross the boundary, we're going to have problems. But I always thought it's interesting they took that out of context to make that necklace. But somebody made a lot of money off that necklace.
Might be better for marriage than girlfriend.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, that's probably, you know, probably Hitting Home has that on their... No, I'm just saying. So, some good business for Hitting Home right there. But anyway, that's the Mizpah story. So if you see the Mizpah necklace, somebody out there wearing a Mizpah necklace, it's like, anybody have one? Maybe I'm offending some couples. I don't know. So anyway, but nobody will say now. But I think Brenda had one with her, an old boyfriend. No, I'm just teasing. So, anyway, you can ask them, say, hey, tell me about the Mizpah stone. What is that all about? You know, and they'll be like, oh. So you can teach them a little Bible history there with the Mizpah necklace, and then give them Pastor Raymond's card for counseling later on. The other stone reference I've got, there's other memorials in the Bible. There's the Passover, of course, which is a big memorial reference that God, well, not a stone involved, but there was the Passover meal, right? And so the event, really, of the Passover, probably the, one of the biggest memorials of the Bible. But I wanted to go to Exodus 28. And there's, so, and actually this is probably, I know the reference might be too long to read, but let's go to Book of Exodus, chapter 28. And it's talking about the ephod. So it's just another little Bible history lesson here that it's kind of interesting that we don't really study a whole lot of. So there were priestly garments, right? And this would probably be a good Wednesday night study. Maybe some of our young men can put together a Bible study on this. But there's the priestly garments that that the priest would wear, right? The tribe of Levi. And so there were all kinds of different garments. And I mean, the closest thing I can think of this today is like churches that we grew up in. I don't know if anybody grew up in church where the pastor would wear, you know, a white robe and would wear maybe something called a stole, which was, and my dad was a Lutheran pastor. I remember growing up, and my brother was. And these were the garments that the pastors would wear. And some of those were probably spun off of the Old Testament accounts of the priests wearing these vestments, basically. But there was something called the ephod. Anybody know what an ephod is? We don't study this a whole lot, but it's interesting. So it's really best thought of like, think of it like a fishing vest, not to bring it down too much, but it was basically a vest or a breastplate that had these little pockets in it, and they would keep stones in there with all the names of the tribes of Israel engraved on the stones. And then there was also, there was something called the Urim and the Thummim. So another good Bible study at some point if you want to look it up. But the Urim and the Thummim, anybody want to take a stab at what the Urim and Thummim were? And just caught Pastor Raymond's attention. But the Urim and the Thummim were basically, as I understand it, two objects that the priest would wear in his fishing vest, ephod, if you will, to determine God's will. And you know, it's a little mysterious because it almost gets into like, sounds like divination. I'm not sure what, you know, is this really in the Bible? But we hear about casting lots in the Bible, don't we? So, you know, like, was it Job? Not Job. My Bible story is mixed up. See, somebody's going to catch me on this. Jonah was on the ship, and what did they do to figure out what to do with the storm? They cast lots, and they said, oh, the lot points to Jonah. He's off the ship. I think, didn't he jump off the ship anyway? But anyway, to save all of them. So anyway, it's the Urim and Thummim were kind of like that. Mysterious, because it almost gets into like, sounds like divination. I'm not sure what, you know, is this really in the Bible? But we hear about casting lots in the Bible, don't we? So, you know, like, was it Job? Not Job. My Bible story is mixed up. See, somebody's going to catch me on this. Jonah was on the ship. And what did they do to figure out what to do with the storm? They cast lots, and they said, oh, the lot points to Jonah. He's off the ship. I think, didn't he jump off the ship anyway? But anyway, to save all of them. So anyway, it's the Urim and Thummim were kind of like that. The point is that these were stones that the priest would wear in his vest, and they would engrave the names of the of the tribes of Israel on the stones. So that maybe it was just, you know, maybe it was a reminder to the priest of who all the tribes were, so he could remember to pray for them. So, which is another good point. Anybody want to take a stab at the tribes of Israel? Like, if I were Mr. House here, I'd have like $12 in my pocket, or my sons would have $12 in their pocket that I could pay you off. But I already owe my sons for mowing the lawn, so I'm not going to offer any money. But anybody want to take a stab at the 12 tribes of Israel that the priest wore? So we got, what are the easy ones? Benjamin, okay. That's the least of the... Judah, okay. Okay, just hold that thought. We'll come back to it. It's Issachar. Zebulun. Okay, you're done. Anybody else with this? No Bible college graduates. Tribes, we got, yeah. Awesome. Wow. Very good. All right. Somebody will pay you $12 for that. Josiah, didn't you pay off the last? Okay. Josiah, I'll get you $12. So the only caveat to that is, so Joseph, so when we're talking about the tribes of the land associated with him, Joseph went to Egypt, remember that? And he had two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. So they were counted amongst the tribes, but Levi was not, because they didn't get land because they were priests. But it still came to 12. So I don't know what all 12 names are on those ephods or the stones in the ephod, but the point is the stones were a memorial for the priests to remember the tribes of Israel and for them to be remembered in God's presence, right? So so that's in Exodus 28. If you want to look it up, it's some good reading. We won't go there right now. And the main one I want to get to was in Joshua 4, 5 through 7. Nice kind of short and sweet story. Joshua 4... 5 through 7, and who's back there? You got a Kunkelman to read Joshua 4, 5 through 7? Y'all can cast lots to see who will read. Joshua 4, 5 through 7.
Also known as draw straws.
Draw straws, there you go. Joshua 4, 5 through 7. I don't know who's got a Bible back there. Paul, you got a Bible? Oh, Josiah, okay, you'll count. Okay, good. So neat story. The they're going into the promised land, right? They got the Ark of the Covenant, and there's the Jordan River right there. It's like, no bridges, no boats or barges. How are we going to get across the Jordan River? We got the Ark of the Covenant. We can't put it on a cart. We'll find out later if they do that. Bad things happen. So they were commanded to, when the priest's foot hit the water, what happened? It parted and dry ground was right there. Kind of like the, sounds like the parting of the Red Sea, right? On a smaller scale. But the priests put their foot in the water. They were carrying the ark, walked through on dry ground. And so they're like, wow, this is really cool. Let's make a memorial to this event right here. So they all grabbed a stone out of the river, made a pile of stones. I think it's more than 12 stones there. But they made a pile of stones. They were probably bigger than that. So that when they passed by there in the future, they would say, and their sons would say, hey, what's that pile of stones there for? And they could tell the story, much like the Passover, right? Because the Passover was really started with a question as to, you know, hey, why are we doing all this, you know, rituals and unleavened bread and the blood on the doorpost? What's all that about? And then that prompts telling the story, right? So, and it was often those older people, those veterans of Israel's history that would tell those stories. And so those stories were memorial, but they were really triggered by seeing the pile of rocks. And so that's another neat pile of stone story. One more pile of stone story is a little different. Joshua 7, verse verse 26, and this one just a couple verses down here. Joshua 7:26. So they got into the promised land. They just defeated the Battle of Jericho, right? God made them successful at the Battle of Jericho. And Joshua's like, yeah, let's keep going here. Let's go take the city of Ai. And so they go into battle, not quite as prepared, maybe, as they should have been. and he went out against Ai, and they were defeated, right? And so we don't have to read the whole chapter, but there was this this guy named Achor, or Achan, I believe, that made off with some of the loot from the city of Ai. And so it came down to they cast lots to figure out who that was. Losing my reference here. I went too far. Here we go. I'm in Joshua 8 already. So they found Achan, and Joshua 7:24. Joshua with all of Israel took Achan the son of Zerah, the silver, the garment, the wedge of gold. These were the things that they had taken from the city of Ai. His sons, his daughters, his oxen, his asses, his sheep, his tent, and all that he had, and they brought them to the valley of Achor. And Joshua said, why have you troubled us thus? The Lord shall trouble thee this day. And all of Israel stoned him with stones and burned them with fire. And after they had stoned them with the stones, they raised a great heap of stones upon him this day. And the Lord turned from the fierceness of his anger from them, and the Lord was appeased. It was called the Valley of Achor because of that. So Achan was stoned, basically, and the pile of stones that they killed him with became the memorial. You know, kind of a sad story, sad end for Achan, but also a reminder that you know, we want to seek the Lord's will. Like the Battle of Ai, they went into kind of prematurely. They didn't seek God's will. And so another good account in the Bible of how we need to seek God's will and remember those stories, right? So anyway, what about, and there's a lot more memorial Bible stories you can study. But what about us as a fellowship, as a church? We're at kind of a crossroads in our fellowship, would you say? So, no, see, they don't laugh at the puns and jokes, do they? or maybe it's better to say we're at a very memorable time with our fellowship. You know, we've talked about just in the last weeks how with the coronavirus pandemic or whatever we're calling it, whatever your view is on it, and whatever the politics are behind it, you know, it's definitely put a new spin on having a business. Some businesses don't have businesses anymore, right? Because of this whole pandemic. Churches have been really challenged, and it's really a form of persecution, I believe, that, you know, fortunately we have a very pro-church president. We have a pro-church governor. We have a very pro-church mayor in Ocala, which he's not our mayor anymore. But if anybody who lives in Ocala, let's see, you're not, you're in Ocala. You're too far north. You're in Dunellen. You guys are Dunellen. Wow. You're in Ocala. Okay. So Mayor Gwynn, just a super strong man of faith and leadership. He actually was going to go for Ted Yoho's position and actually stepped down. This was in the paper, I don't know, a couple, 3 weeks ago. Said, no, I'm not going to do that. Ocala needs me right now, especially because of the coronavirus pandemic. And we've actually, many of you have met him. We actually had an opportunity to meet with him in his office, right, Levi, and pray with him. It was just, it was amazing. So just a super, super believing Christian guy, pro-church. So we're very fortunate to have those people in leadership. But there's been many states and stories you've heard about, even in Florida, that different cities that have been, churches have been under pure persecution. And I really think it's the devil, it's the evil one, you know, using this against churches. But we've also seen God prevailing through it all. And it makes me think of the story in, of Joseph when he went to, was taken off to Egypt, and what he said to his brothers when he all finally met him, you know, told him who he was. That's great. Another great biblical account. You know, he kind of strings them along for a while and finally lets them know, you know, hey, I'm Joseph. And they're now they're feeling like, whoa, we're really in trouble now. We're going to, he's probably going to, you know, stone us or execute us, however they do in Egypt. But what did Joseph say to his brothers? He said, as for you, you thought evil against me, but God meant it unto good to bring to pass, as it is to this day, to save much people alive. So the fact that Joseph went to Egypt, he was able to organize all the, you know, whatever he did to save people from the famine, right? God used that. They meant it for evil because they just wanted to get rid of their pesky little brother, right? But God meant it for good. And so don't we look at, kind of look at this whole pandemic like that, and I think even Ben had said weeks ago when this all started, I think we're going to hear stories come out of the coronavirus situation that our people have come to Christ, you know, and churches have thrived through all of that and just in spite of that, you know. So I think it's a neat time for our fellowship. We're doing something new. We're leaving the building we've been used to and you know, may feel a little vulnerable at times, but it's also, I think, been a very good time of fellowship. I think we've said too, the spirit seems like we're almost a little more of a vibrant type spirit when we get together. So I think it's a really exciting thing, a very memorable time, you know, for us as a fellowship, for us as families. I think, you know, I think of when I was growing up, you know, different things that happened in our church fellowship, and we were in a very traditional, you know, church building and the same one for years that I grew up in. But I've got great memories of that. I think you kids are going to have memories of these times that it's like, wow, remember that time when we were meeting at the Krause's place and somebody fell in the pool or, you know, I mean, stuff like that. You know, so you're going to have just very memorable times, on a spiritual level, I believe, of, just growth in your spirit, you know, and, you know, who knows what'll come out of this. You know, we were talking about being, our evangelism is going to change, right? We're going to be in different neighborhoods, and I didn't invite my neighbors today, but, you know, we're going to have opportunities to invite our neighbors that you guys had your neighbors last week. That came and joined us. So, you know, it's just exciting to see what's going to come out of this. And we say, you know, well, who knows what will come out of this? But the answer is God knows, right? And yeah, it's all part of God's plan. And look at Jeremiah 29:11. What's that great verse we always quote to each other? For I alone know the plans I have for you, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future, right? And the other part is you got to call and pray to him and seek him and find him. But so we can't forget that part, which I believe we're seeing that a lot more in our fellowship. So so I've got a famous quote for you. I want to see if you know who said this. And make sure nobody, you're not asleep yet, are you? Okay. So here's a quote. To see the future, you have to know the past. Who said that? To see the future, you have to know the past. Anybody, famous person of history that said that? Anybody know? Any guesses? No? That was quoted by Levi Krause 2 days ago. So I'm like, Levi, that is profound. I don't know what we were doing. We were just walking out, taking a walk, and Levi said this, and it dawned on me until later. It's like, Levi, that is profound. Tell me what you said again. To see the future, yeah. And so it is a person of history, right? It's historically 2 days ago. Maybe somebody did say it. Justice says he said it.
I put that in his mind.
Okay, all right. So anyway, going to have a brotherly argument there. But anyway, to see the future, you have to know the past. And so it sounded profound. And I thought, well, I'm going to quote Levi. Maybe we'll find out later somebody said that. But that's the point of the whole message today, is like, you know, we can look at all these Bible stories, and are they just stories or are they actual historical accounts of what happened in history, so that we can look forward, you know, as individuals, as families, as a church fellowship, to what God is doing in our midst. And so, you know, Pastor Raymond talked this morning about Hebrews 11. We'd studied that before, the great hall of fame, hall of faithers, that those who had gone before us, that we look at their faith and we look at their lives, and you know, we look to the past to see the future, to really understand the future and hope for the future. I want to go to one more reference, 1 Corinthians 15, because this kind of brings it all together for memorial. But 1 Corinthians 15, actually I've got it printed out right here. Moreover, brethren, this is 15:1-2. Moreover, brethren, I declare unto you the gospel which I preached, and now say you among you that there is no resurrection of the dead. But if there be no resurrection of the dead, then is Christ not risen? And if Christ is not risen, then is our preaching vain, and your faith is also vain. Yea, we are found false witnesses of God, because we have testified of God that he raised up Christ, whom he raised not up, if so be that the dead rise not. For if the dead rise not, then it is not Christ raised. Then is not Christ raised. And is not Christ be raised, your faith is in vain, and ye are yet in your sins. And they which also have fallen asleep in Christ are perished. If in this life only we have hope in Christ, we are of all men most miserable. And you read that section and you think, whoa, this is like messing with my thinking, because it's almost like negative psychology. You know, you get to thinking, okay, if Christ hasn't raised, then all these Bible stories, they are just stories, right? There's really no point to them. They're good stories, and they look cool in flannel graph. Anybody know what flannel graph is? I know Butch does. Yeah, Melanie knows what a flannel graph is. One of these days we're going to get a flannel graph board, because nobody knows what it is. But I just remember these boards with pieces of felt, and Jesus would move, and he'd walk on the water, and it was just really, wasn't CGI, I know, you know, but it was pretty cool. But we are of all men most miserable. And you read that section, you think, whoa, this is like messing with my thinking, because it's almost like negative psychology. You know, you get to thinking, okay, if Christ hasn't raised, then all these Bible stories, they are just stories, right? There's really no point to them. They're good stories, and they look cool in flannel graph. Anybody know what flannel graph is? I know Butch does. Yeah, Melanie knows what a flannel graph is. One of these days we're going to get a flannel graph board, because nobody knows what it is. But I just remember these boards with pieces of felt, and Jesus would move, and he'd walk on the water, and it was just really, wasn't CGI, I know, you know, if Christ is not risen. But what's the next verse? Verse 20. Can't leave that out, because it says, but now Christ is risen from the dead, and has become the first fruits of them that sleep. And so we say, what do we say at Easter? We said it to a small crowd here, Easter sunrise service. Christ is risen, right? He is risen indeed. And so because Christ is risen, all those stories mean something in the Bible. They're not just stories, and those memories can trigger us on to faith, to greater faith. And verse 50 to 58 of 1 Corinthians 15 says, this wraps it up. Now say this, brethren, that flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of God, neither doth corruption inherit incorruption. For behold, I show you a mystery. We shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trumpet. For the trumpet shall sound, and the dead shall be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed. For this corruptible must put on incorruption, and this mortal must put on immortality. So when this corruptible shall have put on incorruption, and this mortal shall have put on immortality, then shall be brought to pass the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory. O death, where is thy sting? O grave, where is thy victory? The sting of death is sin, and the strength of sin is the law. But thanks be to God, who gives us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. And so I think on this weekend, when we think about those who have died, those who have died in battle specifically, but we can't help but think of our loved ones, right, that have gone before us. That's what it's all about. God has taken away the sting of death, the sting of sin. And verse 58 says, therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, for as much as you know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. So these memorials that we have, you know, really, I think, inspire us to do greater things. We look at the faith of those who have gone before us, and much like the soldiers who died in battle, we enjoy the freedoms of meeting in our homes, of meeting in churches, wherever we want to meet. We have freedoms in our country that we would not have if collectively all of those who died in battle had not fought and died for that. You know, I mean, we could be if Hitler hadn't been defeated, I mean, we could be a socialist, fascist country by now, which there's people that are still trying to make us that way. So, but much like the soldiers who fought and died for our freedoms, Christ really fought and died and defeated death and sin, and we now have the victory through Christ because of that. And so the bottom line is Christ is risen. Hallelujah. And all those stories mean something. And Levi's quote, what was it, Levi? To understand the future, we have to know the past, right? So I'm going to put that in. I'm going to put that on a stone. But that's why we do that. And why we also, you know, invite our neighbors. We evangelize. We want others to enjoy that victory too and to escape that sting of death. So that brings me to the pile of stones that's sitting over here. So we're not going to have Pastor Raymond, like, put his foot in the water and watch the water part, you know, kind of special effect. We thought about how we could do that, but, you know, it'd be kind of cool. But we'll leave that to Good Shepherd because they do that good with parting the Red Sea and the pillar of fire and all that at the Nativity. But what we are going to do is... thought it'd be cool, you know, I've got this little stone here that I think the sticker came off, but I think, was this out of the group of stones that we did for Grace's memorial birthday 3 years ago in the park? And we have two or three of these floating around. I had another one that's got there's a sticker on the back, and it says the red shoes. It's got the hashtag or whatever on there. So anyway, this says Inspire. We decorated some stones, and we've got those floating around. They've gotten weathered. We put them in our rock garden. But whenever I look at this stone, and I've got another stone here that says Freedom. I don't know if anybody of you remember Buddy Brennan, our old friend from Fort McCoy, Buddy and Sybil. They're actually up in Cape Cod now, Nantucket, in a nursing home because she had some health issues. So he went from his 300 acres of prime real estate in Fort McCoy to a nursing home in Nantucket, so he's making the best of it. But he gave me this rock, says Freedom, and this says Jesus is our rock. But whenever I look at those things, I'm like, oh, wow, yeah, I remember Buddy, I remember, you know, things he would say. I think of Grace when I hear these, see these little stones. So what I thought we could do today is, I don't know if there's not enough stones for everybody to have their own stone, but there's enough for each family to grab a stone. And so what we want to do is have each of us as families, maybe you want to send a representative up, you know, if you want to march over the steps and come get it, make a little more ceremony, just don't fall in the pool. But don't throw the stones in the pool, don't throw them at each other, don't throw them through the windows. But there's a basket full of markers back there, and it might have been the same markers that we had y'all write on our floors with when we blessed our home, or when you blessed our home. But take a stone, take a big one if you want, and write your family name on it. Write the date. You know, if you got a favorite verse, you're going to put on it. I don't know what we'll do with these, but if you want to take them home, put them on your mantle. You just have it be a memorial to a time when we as a fellowship are doing something new, or God is doing something new, really, and new and exciting things. And just take a stone and have fun with it. And if there's some left over, you can probably decorate more. But make sure each family gets a pretty good size stone. And if we're missing some people today, then we'll leave some for whoever's missing. I'm not sure who's all missing, but we'll figure out who's missing. We'll get them a stone and say, hey, go listen to the message. Here's your stone. Decorate your stone. Maybe someday we'll have a building. Who knows? We'll put all the stones in a little pile in a display cabinet and say, oh, yeah, I remember that. You know, when God was doing some great things and we were at exciting times. So that's kind of the point of the stones, finally. So my kids now know what the stones are all about.